talk New York sports here. The Fan.
All right, 302. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. 888-808-1019. So, yeah, obviously we just heard there again from the update, Senga. The Mets are talking to him, and we'll find out Friday whether or not he's willing to accept the stint in the minors. Fliegelman was on this a week ago to send him down and see if he could work on things with him, and I would be surprised if he says no. I don't know how you can say no. I don't know how you could look the organization in the face, you know, miss all of last year with all those injuries, pitch the way he's pitched now since coming back, and not be, you know, as they're battling for, you know, a wild card spot, as they're battling to get into the postseason down the stretch of the season. I don't know how you can argue, because this is a way to set yourself up for success. So I think he's going to say yes, and I don't know what they do if he says no. I would think he's going to say yes. And hopefully he can go down. Now the question is, do they call up Sproat? Do they do anything? Do they just change it from a six-man rotation to a five-man rotation? That's what I would do. Right? I mean, Peterson's been better with an extra day. Clearly Clay Holmes could use the extra day. As again, he gives you the typical 4 2/3 in yesterday's outing. Not bad, you know, keeps you in the games, pitched well enough, but he's not getting deep into the games. And clearly, the inning limit, you know, his innings here have become much more than they've been in his career as a reliever. So he benefits from it. But I mean, McLean and Tong, there's no reason to have them on a 6-man rotation. I would think you just move Senga down and add another arm to the bullpen. You could call up Sproat and throw him into the mix, but I mean, we'll see. But it starts with Senga accepting the demotion or whatever, just a stint in the minor leagues to try and work on things, because, like, to me, I think they need him. I just, as great as McLean is, and the last start really is the one that makes you impressed and makes you think, you know, you feel comfortable starting him game one of a postseason series. I mean, that's really where it's at, crazy enough. But I just, it's tough to not have someone that you know is a close to top of the rotation starter. And Kodai Senga has proven to be that over the first, you know, 2 years of his Met tenure. He's proven to be a guy who can be that kind of pitcher for you. It's been a miserable 2 months or whatever it's been since returning from the injury, but I need to find that guy. So if you could send him down, I know it's only a month left, and he's not going to have many turns down there, but I got to do anything I can to see if I can find a way to get him ready for a postseason start, because I think they need him. They need him or Manaea. Even with McLean and Tong kind of becoming what they become, we're looking for Tong's second start here to see what it looks like. But, I mean, I was listening to the morning show driving home yesterday, and Boomer's calling him Tom Seaver. So let's see how that goes moving forward. But we'll find out about Senga. I'm sure he's going to accept that stint in the minors, and hopefully it'll benefit him. And, you know, the Mets will have a day off here and take on, I guess, an important series, although there's, what are they, 5 games up on Cincinnati? 5.5 games up on Cincinnati? It's not the series we thought it would have been 2 weeks ago when they were right there within a game of each other, but it's an important series. And right now, this offense, Juan Soto, I mean, they kind of got stifled a little bit yesterday, but for the most part, they've been on an absolute tear. The rotation's obviously a mess right now, and the bullpen's kind of a mess too, as another miserable performance from Helsley, who at this point is unpitchable. I mean, he's given up, what, 18 runs in 14 innings, something crazy like that. It's unbelievable. And the numbers off of his fastball are insane. And even, I mean, and Mendoza's still talking about the idea that it looks like, even the way they're taking pitches, like they someone's got something on him somewhere. I don't know what happened because he was pitching relatively well the last 11, 12 outings in St. Louis before coming to the Mets. I don't know what's happened here, but I've never seen 102-mile-an-hour fastballs be consistently hit like this. He is getting absolutely pounded. Tommy in Astoria. What's up, Tommy?
Hello, Christopher. How are you, kid?
Good, buddy. How are you?
What a better way to start off my 60th birthday than to talk to the best guy.
Oh, happy birthday. Well, thank you very much. Happy birthday to you, sir. What's going on?
Thank you. Look, let's take a break from talking about these terrible bullpens. I got a question for you. Let me throw this out. I've been wanting to ask you this for a couple of weeks. I'm going to make you the GM of a baseball team. You're starting a new team, right? You're starting off, right? I'm going to give you two sets of players. You tell me who you're going to take, okay?
Okay.
The first group is going to be the Yankee group. You get Dominguez, Wells, Rice, and Volpe, right?
Dominguez, Wells, Rice, and Volpe, okay.
Second group, Met group, Vientos, Beatty, Alvarez, Mauricio. Who are you taking? You're starting off a team. Pretty close, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd have to say the Mets. Alvarez, yeah, I would think you'd have to say the Mets. Volpe has done, you know, pretty much nothing. Dominguez isn't even a starter right now. Wells is a, you know, Alvarez has shown more at his best, but Wells has probably, you know, one, been able to stay healthier, and he just hit his 20th home run. So, I mean, I don't know, but I would... I would still say that Vientos was a stud, you know, and I think Mauricio has an opportunity to be a stud.
Is Wells a good? I don't watch the Yankees as much, obviously as much as you do. Is Wells a good defensive catcher?
Yes. Well, he's good at framing ball. You know, that's pretty much what defensive catching means these days. He's not great at controlling the run game necessarily, but he frames pitches very well. He ranks high in Major League Baseball for framing pitches.
Right, but Dominguez, they're not like down on Dominguez, right? He's just like he can't hit right-handed, right? He's just not a good outfielder.
Yeah, no, he can. Like, yeah, he right now he's just not a good enough outfielder to play every day. And with Grisham playing the way he's playing, the way Rice is playing, like there's just no room for him right now. He hasn't distinguished himself. Now we'll see what happens next year, and that's an interesting conversation actually, because a lot of people are talking about the idea that, you know, they don't want Grisham re-signed under any circumstance because you want to develop Dominguez. I don't know if you could look at it that way. I mean, Grisham's been so good. He's still, you know, 28 years old.
And Bellinger's a free agent too, right?
Bellinger is going to opt out. Go ahead.
I'm not saying people kill Cashman, but getting Bellinger and Chisholm, you don't get a guy like Jazz Chisholm in a trade deadline that often. I mean, that was a dynamite trade.
Yeah.
I mean, it really was.
No, I mean...
I know he kills Cashman, but that was a home run with that one.
No, absolutely. The Jazz trade was a great one, and the Bellinger trade's a great one. There's no doubt. The Devin Williams one's a disaster, I guess. I mean, I will see what Durbin turns out to be. Obviously, no one cares they traded Nestor Cortez. Durbin's playing well, but yeah, I mean, it's amazing that this has worked this has been an enormous flop. I can't remember. Randy Johnson wasn't this bad, obviously. But it was disappointing. You thought Randy Johnson was going to come over and be incredible. I can't remember being as excited for a pitcher. Like I thought it was a brilliant trade. I was so happy Devin Williams was coming here. So happy. It's amazing how bad it's been. It's amazing how bad it's been. And last night, I kind of want to be fair to him. He got squeezed. He pitched better than what actually happened on the mound, but it's not good enough. And that final at bat, he's just got to throw strikes. I don't care what. If he hits one in the gap, he hits one in the gap. He's the nine hitter. You got to throw him strikes. Phil in Tom's River. What's up, Phil?
Good morning, Christopher. How are you today?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. I got to listen. On June 1st, the Mets starting rotation ERA was under 3. The bullpen was under 2. Mm-hmm. Since June 1st, it's 5.36 the starters. And the bullpen with Hensley, I don't know offhand, but why don't you do something before? The starting pitching has been horrendous since June 1st. Mm-hmm. Nobody can get out of the fourth or fifth inning. Nobody.
Yeah.
Clay Holmes, he's a four-inning pitcher. He's almost triple his limit right now as a pitcher that he's ever pitched ever in his career. Why don't they move him to the bullpen, Chris? I don't understand. Because you're going to kill this guy's arm.
I don't know about that. I mean, who else are they going to start?
Listen, you got McGill coming up. You got to send Senga down. Bring Sprout. Why not give... I'm not saying Sprout's going to be
Sprout.
Great like McClain has been. Sprout,
yeah, I mean, but that's okay. But I'm sorry, just figured I'd correct you. No big deal. But like,
oh, that's all right.
Yeah, no, but I don't know. Like, who knows
they
what it's going to be?
Chris, you're right. But right now, you know what you got. You got guys that can't get out. If you go into the playoffs like this, I don't care who you play in the first round, you're getting shelled. And right now, this playoff started today. It's McClain, Tong, and Peterson. Why? Hang it down. Why not?
Are you sure it's Tom?
I don't understand. Who else are you going to put in there?
Clay Holmes.
Chris, nobody can get out of the fourth inning.
Yeah, Chris, I know, but Clay Holmes pitched it. Well, he got out of the fourth. He pitched 4 2/3 and gave up 2 runs.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but you'll take that in a postseason start as opposed to a young kid who's had one major league start. Clay Holmes is 11-7.
Chris, 1 year.
What?
He pitched 1 year. It's not like
he's been an all-star. He's been an all-star. I know he's as a reliever,
as
but
what? As a what? Tell me. As a what? Thank you.
I understand. But he's pitched all year. He's pitched all year as a starter. He's won 11 games for you.
All right, Chris.
Tom's made one major league start.
I understand that, Chris.
I don't think you do.
I do understand it, but what has he given us? Nothing. Nothing.
He gave you 5 innings of 2-run baseball today. That's an opportunity to win the game.
4 2/3. 4 2/3.
He's one out shy of 5 innings. But he gave you four and two-thirds of 2-run baseball. That's good enough to keep you in the game.
Chris, now our bullpen is a mess. Only person I trust in that bullpen
And what's Tong going to do? Go 8?
I'm not saying he is, but these kids went 6-5, 6-7. McClain has more innings.
McClain is proven over 4 starts. We'll see. Tong might get to that point.
4 starts and he went 7 innings, 6 innings every time or more.
No, I understand that. He's been Peterson, really good. Tong went 5 innings.
He went 5 innings 4 times all year. I don't understand. Like, these kids are your future. Get them up here now. They're not. Sprout's not up here.
Just that, but they brought up 2 out of 3. Sprout's coming up.
Why not the third one?
I don't know because there's a month left, and you can't rely on 3 rookies to make postseason starts for you. Like, you make it sound like
why
that's
not?
The answer. Because I don't know. I mean, you could, but good luck with that. You think that's easy? How many times has that happened in the history of baseball? You haven't even seen him. Tong's made one start. You're telling me already he's better than Clay Holmes because you don't like how many. Clay Holmes, I'll tell you I would tell you right now in a postseason start, if Tong gives you 4 2/3 and 2 runs, you'll sign for that in a heartbeat. You would sign for that in a heartbeat. You would take Tong giving you what Clay Holmes gave you yesterday every single time in a postseason start. Have you watched these postseason games? They don't let these guys go deep. The bullpen's going to have to improve. I'm just saying. Who's been pitching better? You want to knock Clay Holmes? Who's been pitching better? Who's been pitching better? Peterson? Not over the last month. He hasn't been. With his 7 ERA. I'm open to moving Clay to the bullpen, but I mean to get on Clay when he's been one of your better starters. Still, I know he doesn't go deep in the game. What do you think Tong's going to do? Like, he's made one major league start. Sproat hasn't even been here yet. We got him making postseason starts now. You want to go into the postseason with three rookies and Peterson as your four-man rotation into the postseason? Not only rookies who didn't even, like, Sproat wouldn't even made a start until obviously it's already September. You're going to bring up a kid and you're going to have Tong make his, like, fourth major league start in the postseason and Sproat make his third major league start in the postseason? Because Clay Holmes doesn't go more than five? You would sign in blood for 4 2/3 of five, with two earned runs from a rookie in a postseason start. You'd sign in blood for it. Like, I get it. I get it. You want these guys to go deep, but you make it sound like you have that answer. Sproat, I don't even know. Tong has only made one start, and I believe he only went five in the start, with massive run support, by the way. McLean has been different. McLean has pitched like an ace so far in his first four starts. But, like, we're so quick to just knock Clay Holmes or put him in the bullpen. I'm still thinking Clay Holmes makes a postseason start. And I'd sign for that right now. 4 2/3 of two runs, give it to me right now. Mets offense has got to do what they do.
Real sports talk for real fans with real opinions. The Fan, 101.9 FM and always streaming on the Odyssey, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn apps.
So the football season is upon us tonight. Eagles, Cowboys to start the year. Obviously, it's fantasy football time as well. I was last night three drafts. I had one in person with my neighborhood, so we were all there. I'm doing the draft in person. Then I had two drafts on remote through the computer. One started at 9:30, the other one at 10 o'clock. And I'm also trying to watch the Yankee game on my phone. I was busy there for a second. And I'm scoring the game because I'm that crazy when it comes to these Astros games. So, like, I literally have my book where I'm scoring the game. I have the laptop where I'm doing two different drafts. And I have the draft that's in front of me, the live draft with, my neighbors. And, like, people are trying to talk to me. I must have been, like, the most rude. I was like, huh? Yeah, no. I heard a couple, like, oh, so, yeah, what about that? I'm like, sorry. Trying to talk sports to me and stuff. I'm like, I can't. I'm all over the place. I'm all over the place. But that's and then, of course, my sons want to do a fantasy draft, and now my brother-in-law doesn't want to do it or doesn't have time to do it. So I'm going to have to figure something out tomorrow later today now before the game gets started to come up with some sort of league to put them in. I don't know. Never ends. It never ends. But hopefully for the New York Giant and Jet fan here, we won't be only focused on our fantasy team come October, which has been too often the case. You already know they put out the video and everything. I think the New York Giants are going to win the first two games of the year. I don't know about after that. I think the season's going to be better than people expect, but I just have a weird feeling about the first two games of the year on the road in the division, and we'll see about the Jets, who got bad news yesterday. Obviously, if you haven't heard, Elijah Vera Tucker, the excellent guard interior lineman for the New York Jets, it sounds like he suffered a tricep injury, and he's expected to miss a significant portion, if not the entire season, and it's a devastating blow to start the year. I mean, if you're a Jet fan, it's one of those. This poor guy, one, he can't stay healthy on just the Vera Tucker thing himself. Personally, for him, the guy just can't stay healthy. It happens every year. He's almost inarguably their best offensive lineman. He is flexible. He is a excellent run block, at the guard position, which is what they're trying to do here. Like, you can argue he's one of the most important players on the team. And the identity of this team is going to be running the football, and that offensive line is going to be a huge part of it. And to lose him just as the season is about to get underway is absolutely devastating. Now, you know, we'll see what they do. Earlier in camp, Simpson went down with injury, and he was gone for a little bit. When that happened, they moved Tippmann to guard and Josh Myers to center. It sounds like that's probably what they're going to do here. The offensive line is still pretty talented. It doesn't mean it has to be a death knell to the season. We'll see what this group does, but it's just one of those things where it's like, man, you're looking to get off to a good start. You're looking to build something here, and you're looking to build it through that unit. And to lose the best offensive lineman you have right before the season starts is an absolute gut punch. I mean, you just start to think this franchise is cursed. Like, that's just, I mean, that's just a miserable injury. Now, again, it doesn't have to be a death knell. I think the offensive line is still pretty talented even without him. But they're going to look to run the football. That's going to be their identity. And it's, and this was supposed to be the unit that was going to define this team, really. Certainly offensively, it's about the offensive line. It's about blocking it up front. It's about Vera Tucker leading the charge, and instead he's going to be on the sidelines waiting for next year. It's a devastating injury. It absolutely stinks. And it's something that's going to hamper who they are. It's going to impact what they're trying to do. So it's just, it's so unfortunate to see it start right at the start of the year. But it doesn't mean this is where the coach, right? The coach is a culture builder. This is where the coach comes in. They're going to have to find a way to coach it up, make sure this offensive line doesn't suffer, because they're not changing they're not changing that thought process. They're going to run the football. They're going to run the football with Allen. They're going to run the football with Hall. They're going to run the football at their quarterback. Now, we'll see. I mean, there's some speculation they might try and add a wide receiver here, because I don't know about the wide receiving core, and I don't know about what this passing attack is going to be with Justin Fields. This is strictly about running the football and playing defense. That's who the Jets are. That is going to be their identity, and that's going to be prevalent and obvious immediately. But I think that there's an opportunity for this team to be really good, you know, be pretty good. We'll see. I think it's a tough week one matchup, and it sucks that the building, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, the building is going to be a lot of Pittsburgh Steelers fans. And I guess there's some thought process. I saw the midday show talking about booing Aaron Rodgers. Like, who cares? Boo Aaron Rodgers. Boo him all you want. I would be surprised Jet fans, like, look, he tried to, like, and he wanted to stay. He tried to come here and change things. It didn't work out, and he had a devastating injury and everything, and I know he caused some headaches and, you know, made it all about him, and he's a selfish guy and all the other nonsense. He did come here and try and take the Jets to places they've never been. And he did give them one of the better quarterback seasons they've seen. And that's saying something, because he wasn't that good. But he comes in as a Pittsburgh Steeler, and it sounds like it's going to be a 50-50 building, which is still impossible for me to understand. I mean, this is the game to go to. This is the beginning of the new genre. This is the beginning of the new era. This is the beginning of the Aaron Glenn tenure of New York Jet football, and you'd rather sell your tickets to Pittsburgh Steelers fans? Then you get the Vera Tucker news. It's hard to build optimism around these football teams. It is. Even yesterday, I probably overreacted to Jackson Dart being the second string quarterback. It annoyed me. But I don't know when we would see Jackson Dart. I still think the plan would be to not play him for a while, but now he's just at any moment. And again, when we talk about offensive linemen, it sounds like Andrew Thomas, who was limited in practice yesterday, it sounds like it's unlikely he plays week one against the Commanders. if you don't have your blindside protector, like anything could happen to Russell Wilson, who's 40 years old or close to it. And now you've got Jackson Dart as your second string quarterback looking to come in. Like, I don't understand it. But as we get closer to Sunday, we'll get into the picks and everything. Tonight's game, 7.5 point spread for the Eagles. I didn't know. I guess there's a Saquon Barkley documentary coming out, which I had heard of. I did not know it's being directed by Martin Scorsese. That Martin Scorsese is doing the I mean, it's just unbelievable, Saquon Barkley. It's just unbelievable. Say now the great New York director, Martin Scorsese, is going to direct a documentary or has directed a documentary about Saquon Barkley. But I think tonight the Eagles roll. I think the Eagles roll tonight. I wouldn't be scared by the 7.5 points. I wouldn't know what else to do. I probably won't touch the game. I'm not the biggest, we'll give you picks and everything. I'm just saying, for me, I like to get the season underway a little bit before I put too much money on the, a lot of people love the first week. A lot of people do all the homework and they feel like they have an entire offseason to focus on these first week games, and they love betting the first week. I tend to kind of dip my toes in the water the first week or two, but I think tonight I'm on the Eagles. I just think they're a far better team. I think the Cowboys right now, I think Schottenheimer is a disaster as a head coach. Whether or not Micah Parsons literally has a back injury and whether or not that trade will prove to be good in the long run, it doesn't change the fact that it makes them a much lesser effective defense without one of the premier edge rushers in the sport. I think their run game looks like it's going to struggle. All they really have is a passing attack. That's who they are. They're going to be their passing game with, you know, Lamb and Pickens and obviously Dak. Like, that's what they're going to try and rely on here. And I just don't know if you can be a one-dimensional football team against a team like the Philadelphia Eagles coming off a Super Bowl championship. So divisional games are always tough, and 7.5 is a big number, but I'd probably lay it tonight with the Eagles. But looking forward just to have football back. Looking forward just to have football back. We still have we'll have the baseball game to go against it, as the Yankees and Astros will play the third game of the rubber match of a third game series with Carlos Rodon on the mound. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Stuart in Brooklyn. What's up, Stu?
Like I said to Mike, what was Williams in the eighth inning? Come on, Chris.
What's that?
Why was Williams pitching in a leverage situation? Yeah. I thought we were not going to go there.
No, I mean, I think they are going to go there.
I didn't want him to go. I don't want him to go there. He's got to have some other option than him.
Like who? I mean, it's Bednar is the only guy you could really. I mean, you want to throw Leiter there? I'm not going to throw Tim Hill against Carlos Correa to start that inning, and you can't tell me Duvall because he's just as bad.
No. What about Weaver? Oh, did he already
pitch? Yeah, Weaver pitched in the seventh.
Mm-hmm.
And he blew the lead. Like, Weaver blew the lead too, you know. It's not like it wasn't just Williams. Cruz gave up a couple runs. Cruz gave up one run. Cruz gave up a run. Weaver gave up a run. Williams obviously walked too many guys. But Duvall was the one. Duvall doesn't have to come in and immediately give up base hits, balks, and wild pitches.
So now, who do you trust 7, 8, 9 in the bullpen?
I guess Cruz, Weaver, and Bednar. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would agree with you on that 100%.
Yeah, but Cruz and he pitched Cruz and Weaver first. I think he was trying to avoid Devin Williams. They blew the lead, and once the game is tied, he doesn't want to go to his closer. He could have went to Leiter still, but...
Leiter or Williams, it's a toss-up right now. It's a toss-up, and I would lean toward Leiter a little bit more than Williams, because Leiter is slightly more reliable than Williams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Williams right now, it's getting to the point where they can't continue to do this. I know they'd like to. I know he's got a devastating pitch. I know he's pitched better. What?
His pitch has not been working.
No, I mean, oddly, it has. Whenever he pitches in non-crucial situations.
Non-pressure, he's good.
Yeah. No, I mean, that his changeup still has. Like, if you look at the, you know, the pitch metrics on it, it's still one of the more devastating pitches in baseball this year. It still grades out to be one of the best pitches in baseball, but he just can't locate at times. He was wild today. He did get squeezed a little bit, to be fair, but if he can't locate the fastball and he's just relying on the change, he's got to throw the change in the zone, and that can get hit. But yesterday was more about just being wild and being hit. He really didn't get hit that hard. Walt in Oceanport. What's up, Walt?
Hey, what's going on, C-Mac?
What's up, buddy? How are you?
I'm doing okay. I hope you had a... you just got back from Italy, didn't you?
I did. Not too long. Last week, I got back from Italy. Yep.
Okay. I hope you had a great time.
Thank you. I did. I was out in Sicily. It was amazing.
Good for you.
Thank you.
And, my question is that I was just reading not too long ago that the Giants just sold 10% of the team for $10 billion, okay?
No.
And
no, they did not.
Yeah, 10% of the team for $10
billion. They did not.
And then I read that not too long ago, a few months ago, earlier in the summer, that the 49ers sold 6.2% of their team for like $8 billion.
They did
so
not.
So I'm just going off of that. My question to you is...
Yeah, but that's not accurate. I don't know where your numbers are wrong there. The team is valued at a whole of $10 billion. Okay. Not 10% of the team. You think the Giants are valued at $100 billion?
See, Mac, I'm just telling you what the New York Post says, okay?
Okay,
okay, and so now my question to you is, okay, yeah. And I'm probably catching you off guard because then I can switch to the Yankees if you'd like.
No, I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, Fliegelman's telling me that Marco was saying the same thing. There is no way that the team is valued at $100 billion. I don't know how selling 10% of it works. Maybe it's $10 billion over years or something. But like,
the way it read out to me was that Tisch and Mara sold 10% of the team, a minority interest to the Koch family. Okay, and I'm pretty well aware that you're well aware of that.
Yeah.
$10 billion. And I'm like, and so now what does that make the Dallas Cowboys, the Giants, the Jets, any other NFL team worth? Because now you're
Okay. All right. Here's the thing. Okay. I know. This is the Koch family is reportedly agrees to 10% of the team at a $10 billion valuation. So they're buying 10% of a team that the entire team is being valued at $10 billion. They're buying 10% of a $10 billion team. They are not buying 10% for $10 billion.
Okay. Then I might have misread that.
Yeah, that's
okay.
What it says. Reports, Koch family to buy stake in Giants at $10 billion valuation. So the team is being valued at $10 billion, and they're going to buy 10% of that, which would be $1 billion. Okay. There is no way the team is being valued at $100 billion.
Okay. Well, thank you for correcting me on that. Yeah. Okay.
It just didn't make sense to me. There's because the Cowboys are valued at like $12 billion or something. That's the most. There's no way that the Giants are a $100 billion organization. There's just no way.
Okay. Well, thank you. I misread that. But that's where it brought into line that, you know, I'm not a huge proponent of having Jackson start or even play. I mean, if we see him in like week 9 or 10, 11, that'd be fine.
Yeah.
Okay. and just to see him, okay, just to see, like, what he does. But I'm sorry. I mean, collectively, between Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston, I mean, you've got 20 years of, like big-time quarterbacking. I mean, like, yeah, I understand that Jameis Winston has thrown, you know, a ton of interceptions, but he's thrown just as many touchdowns.
Right.
And Russell Wilson, his career, like, speaks for itself. I mean, you know, but why draft those guys if now all of a sudden you're going to hang your hat on a kid who comes out of Ole Miss, okay? And by the way, he needs to learn how to, like, slide feet first, not head first, so he doesn't go into concussion protocol.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think you got to utilize those guys first.
I don't disagree with you. I don't necessarily need to utilize Jameis Winston. Like, Jameis Winston's there in case I need to, but in case it comes up and I have to. But I'm fine with never playing Jameis Winston, but as long as Russell Wilson's playing well. And right now, Jameis Winston's the third string quarterback. Jackson Dart is the second string quarterback. That's what the Giants chose to do it that way. But I agree with you. I don't want to play him for a while. I'll tell you exactly where I would consider bringing in Jackson Dart. So they got these two games, the Commanders, Cowboys, home against the Chiefs, home against the Chargers, on the road against the Saints, Eagles. This is the stretch I would avoid. October 9th, I think that's Sunday night football, or maybe it's Thursday night. Eagles at Giants, then the Giants go on the road to Denver, could be one of the better defenses in the league this year, and then back to Philadelphia to play the Eagles. You've got Eagles at home flying out to Denver to take on a Broncos team that's got arguably the best defense in the sport, and then back to Philadelphia. I'm not even considering playing him until after those three games. Then they're home against the Niners. Once you clear the Eagles, could you consider playing them? Maybe. Depending on what the record is, too. Because if they're winning, then I'm not messing with them. Or if they're winning on some level, I don't expect them to be winning. But if they're winning on some level, if they're close to 500, if they're, you know, respectable, I'm not changing streams, man. I'm just not. In my mind, ideally, Jackson Dart doesn't play the whole year. I don't think that's going to happen. I think he's going to play this year. But that would be my ideal thing, is that they're competing. They're playing meaningful games in December, and Jackson Dart's sitting. That's what I would do. To me, it's one or the other. To me, it's start him from the beginning or go with the intention of winning games with Russell Wilson and take it as long as you can. Now, by making him the second starter, making him the second string guy, it plays into the notion that they believe he's ready. You don't put him an injury away from having to play unless you believe he is close, or, you know, much closer than we would have suspected, or game ready. So at any point, if Russell Wilson struggles, or if they believe him to be the better quarterback in the room, they might make that move. I would like to see it take as long as possible. I'm okay with waiting. I can wait. I want to give him as much of a leeway, as much of a runway. I want to give him every opportunity to watch and learn. I think guys benefit from it. I think he'll benefit from it. But, like, to me, I wouldn't mind, you know, waiting until home against the Packers, or, like, get past the Lions and play the Patriots. Like, I would hope to make it all the way to the end of the year. Steve in Rockland, what's up, Steve?
Man, Chris, I'll tell you. I know why you know what? After reading that article yesterday, you know, that was just all about the percentages and the analytics and everything. Listen, I'm going to use it as a point of reference. I know why the Yankees traded for Devin Williams. Mm-hmm. Because he is the perfect analytic. Like, if that is what's driving you, he's your guy. But what the Yankees have learned, and what Yankee fans have learned, Devin Williams is exactly like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get, man. All right? I'm not going to knock him. You know, I'm not going to boo him or anything. Of course I want him to succeed. But that was just difficult. And he nearly wriggled out of it. I think if he wouldn't have, you know, run up the pitch count, they might have, maybe they would have let him go. But that was harsh, you know. And the other thing I want to say is that, you know, I've been watching Milwaukee, and I'm Caleb Durbin. How come that name sounds familiar? Because he was the dude that they traded for. He's the starting third baseman for the best team in baseball. And from what I've seen of him, he's pretty good. You know,
yeah, I mean, he's having a pretty good rookie season. We'll see. I have a hard time getting annoyed by it. He was a prospect nobody heard of, and Devin Williams, you want to mention analytics, whatever you want to say analytics, how about just, you know, good baseball numbers? The dude had an ERA under, like, he was at the beginning of the season, he was voted the best reliever in all of baseball.
I mean, all of those things, Chris.
Yeah.
I just feel like, you know, sometimes he...
What?
Oh, man, the wriggle, the whole thing, and the clutching of... The Yankee fans are all clutching their pearls. That was a rough game to lose, man.
Yeah, you know? It was a rough one to lose, I guess. You know, I mean, look, you never want to blow a lead. They had a one-run lead in the seventh inning and lost it. And then the wheels came off with Duvall, which unfortunately has been a common theme with Duvall. But I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy. It's not that devastating a loss. They got to go out and win now. They got to go win this game. They had a 3-0 lead and a 4-1 lead. You'd like to hold on and win that game. It sucks. It sucks. And whenever the bullpen blows a game, it's frustrating. But it's one game. They got to go out and now we'll take the series. They still have an opportunity to win the series. And I don't think they played overly poorly. The pitching fell apart in the end. They were able to jump out into the lead. I thought they played defensively well. They turned double plays. Like, I you know, Stanton out there, that's going to be an issue while he's out in the outfield. But, and we'll see if he's in the lineup today. But I didn't, you know. You got to go out there and now win a series. They have an opportunity with Carlos Rodon on the mound. Eddie in Rockland, what's up, Eddie?
Hey, what's going on, Chris?
What's up,
buddy? That guy was real off on his numbers on the Giants valuation.
Well, I just think he misread it, because it says they bought 10% at a $10 billion evaluation. Means the entire
Giants worth $100 billion.
Yeah, no, the team's worth $10 billion. They're buying 10% of a team that's being valued at $10 billion. Yep.
Well, let's talk about that. Why does the Maris and the Tish need to sell 10%? Okay, the way the team grows, they could borrow from a bank and do a 10-year loan on $10 billion or whatever it is, or on $1 billion, and pay that back by just the growth of the money of what the team's evaluated at. They don't have to sell it to anybody private.
Yeah,
but I guess that's a Mara for you.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think other teams do it too. I don't know how the money can be used or whatever, but when they sign a lot of contracts and the money's front-loaded, it's a technique to get the cash for those contracts that they sign. I don't know if you could do that with borrowing money. Maybe you could. I really don't know the dynamics of it. But I do know that that's why some of these teams will look to sell a little portion of the team. Like he just mentioned in the article, the San Francisco 49ers are selling 7% of their team as well. A lot of it is to get cash that they use to pay signing bonuses and such when they sign contracts.
Right, but if you were selling 10% of your house now to some guy or somebody, okay, and it's growing at whatever 15% every few years, that money's going to grow. It's going to grow. You don't need someone to buy it. You borrow from the bank and you let it grow, and then you reevaluate the team whatever it is.
Maybe you're right. I don't know if they can borrow. Like, I think it's a technique for having that cash on hand and liquidizing. Maybe they can borrow and use the money the same. I'm not sure, but I think it's kind of like a way a lot of teams like to do things. Because again, the San Francisco 49ers are selling pieces too.
I know you're high on the Giants, but let me just make a quick point. I'm gonna look at the Giants this year like I looked at the Jets last year, which was I'm gonna go by who I think is the better coach going in the game.
Okay.
Like in the Washington game coming up.
Yeah.
I think Quinn is 100 times better coach than Dable.
He went to a Super Bowl, though, so I can't argue that he's better. He went to a Super Bowl, but I don't think Dan Quinn's that great a head coach.
I know you don't, but everything he touches always gets better. But can you give me a – and everybody who talks about the last few years of Atlanta falling apart, that was on Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan was falling apart.
Sure, sure. No, I mean, okay?
Matt Ryan barely did anything.
Well, wasn't it Matt Ryan winning MVPs that got them to the Super Bowl then, or was that the coach?
No, Matt Ryan. Listen, Matt Ryan was the MVP, and they were the offensive team of the year.
Yeah,
and
the offensive coordinator probably had more to do with them winning than Dan Quinn did.
And Dan Quinn never changed an offensive play. So when you're third and one on the team's 22, and you go back and shotgun, that's not Dan Quinn's call. That's the offensive coordinator's call, and what's his name, Matt Ryan, getting blindsided. That's his fault. Quinn didn't lose that Super Bowl.
It's very convenient. It's very convenient because when the Giants do things, you seem to put the coach at the forefront of every decision made. But when you're trying to defend Dan Quinn because you want to put down Brian Dable, you're excusing everything.
Wait a minute. You do the same thing with Dable. You give Dable all the credit for year one making the playoffs, but you don't give any credit to Daniel Jones.
I give credit to Daniel Jones. He stopped turning the ball over. Matt Ryan won the MVP. Daniel Jones threw like 11 touchdown passes.
The only thing you talk about Dable is that first year that he went to the playoffs, and then you don't even give the credit to Daniel Jones.
I give the credit to Daniel Jones. I mean, I give Daniel Jones the credit for winning that playoff game. Did you see Daniel Jones's numbers? Like, I mean, come on. We're talking about an MVP in Matt Ryan against Daniel Jones who just didn't turn the ball over. Like, stop. Come on. Now, again, look. You want to say it's all about who's got the better coach? Then we'll see. I mean, if that's the only thing that matters, we'll see who wins this. Andy Reid's never going to lose the Super Bowl. But, like, I don't think Dan Quinn's a fine head coach. I'm not trying to knock him. I don't think he's that great. Is he better than Brian Dable? He went to the Super Bowl. So I'm not going to argue that he's not better, but I don't think he's... Like, I wouldn't feel that much better about the coaching matchup. I don't go into this game as a Giant fan going, oh, man, the big problem is we're going to be out-coached by Dan Quinn.